Hey, this is Vernon Turner, a former NFL football player. I'm blessed to be here with LC and Jack Radio Show.
You are listening to the LC and Jack Radio Show, live from New York. And now, here are your hosts, LC and Jack.
Welcome to the LC and Jack Radio Show with your boy, LC, holding it down. Give us a shout in the studio. You can reach us at 347-843-4738. Up close and personal, Urban Talk Radio. I tell you, man, we get some tremendous guests, but our next guest is, you know what, I'm not going to even really talk because I think his, not think, I know his story is going to, it's one of those type stories. It's like, wow. And I'm so happy that he's able to carve out, you know, some time out of his busy schedule to share his story with us, share it with the world. He has some big things happening. So I tell you, It is just a great opportunity to have him on the show. So make sure you reach out to us, as you do on a regular basis. Hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, all the social media, and we'll let you know what is happening. So without further ado, as promised, so happy our guest today, Mr. Vernon Turner, a former NFL football player that has a story, his story, that he's going to share with us today that will change your life. It changed my life hearing him really tell what life, you know, what his life journey went through, what he did. He is also have a movie of his life that's being developed by the Players Tribune. For those who are not aware, Derek Jeter, formerly of the New York Yankees, is his baby, so to speak. So without further ado, we're so happy to welcome to the show Mr. Vernon Turner. Hello, Vernon, how are you?
LC, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. It's spring in the air here in New York. It's I tell you, we got hit by a snowstorm, you know, recently. So I'm, you know, just so happy that it really seems like spring is here. So I can't complain. I know you're in the warm weather down in the Star State. You know, my favorite state, because, you know, I'm a big Cowboys fan. Now, I know you're a New Yorker at heart.
Yes.
And a lot of our New Yorkers, we like to yeah. A lot of New Yorkers love the Cowboys, baby. So I'm a big Cowboy fan, and just looking forward to
get
successful
that, man.
Season.
I don't get that, man.
Oh, that's why it's America's team.
I can't even comprehend that, man. I mean, either Jets or Giants. I'll even throw in Philly or Patriots.
Yeah.
But Dallas,
Patriots,
man,
oh,
I live here. I lived here for the last 9 years, man, and I cannot root for a Texas team on anything. I just can't do it. I'm New York through and through, man.
I know you are, and that's what's good. We both New Yorkers. And at the end of the day, we have a lot in common. So that's what's good. So, again, thanks again for sharing some time with myself and my audience. They give a tremendous response to our guests that come on the show. And it's just great that you're able to really get your message out to the world. And this is what this platform does. It allows you to, you know, reach anywhere in the world. So thanks again, and I tell you, like we said, you're a Brooklynite from Bed-Stuy. That's what I'm talking. That's where I was born, in Bed-Stuy.
Yes.
And I know you were there and went to Staten Island, really where your journey kind of started out, playing, you know, youth football, which I've done a lot of, coached a lot of kids over the years, and you know, I won't speak for you, but coaches have a big impact on our youth, kind of, you know, molding them from a young age, doing Pop Warner football, and I love doing that. I still dedicate time because, as you will share with the audience, the coaches have a big impact on a kid's lives. So, can you share that with us?
I don't think they realize how much of an impact they do have on these kids. You know, for parents, you know, the kids to parents relationship, parents usually sound like the Charlie Brown teacher, you know, and it goes through one ear and out the other. But if a coach or a teacher says the same message to these kids, they're more likely to actually listen. So I just don't think coaches and teachers, professors, and you know, of that nature, they don't realize how much of an impact and of an influence they have on these kids today. It's tremendous. It's unreal. They can literally change and save lives by the way they interact with these kids.
Yeah, and I've gotten a positive feedback. What keeps me going and doing it is, you know, I run into a kid I coach, and he'll call me coach, and it's been years. You know, he's a grown man. He's saying, "Hey, coach."
Yeah, yeah.
So that's like the ultimate gratification of doing it, and that's what it's all about.
Exactly, it's pretty priceless when you get, just like you said, when you get kids years later after you coach them. And they still reaching out to you, calling you coach. And then they actually, you know, point out specific things that you did for them that you didn't realize how much of an impact it had on them. And stuff like that is priceless. You can't buy that. You can't buy it. That's what it's all about. And again, a lot of these coaches don't realize how much of an impact they do have. Good, bad, and indifferent. I mean, they mm-hmm. can affect them in a negative way, too, if they're not careful, if they don't do things the right way. So, mm-hmm. I mean, these are the things that I speak to a lot of teachers, coaches. I look forward to speaking to them even that much more because they do get handed a dough of clay as far as a young human being, a young adult, and they can actually mold this kid a certain way. And I'm just hoping and praying that they just, you know, make every effort to be there for these kids the right way, you know.
No doubt about it. It's, I tell you, it's great. And I know you were impacted tremendously, your coaches. And I think, and you tell me, without your coach and your youth coach, the life may be different for you. Can you share that with the audience?
Oh, yeah, I can remember because, you know, I came up as a oldest of five. I was braiding hair, cooking dinner, changing diapers, caregiving at age 9. So my mom was a very much of a severe drug addict at the time. And, you know, she was just, she spiraled down. I was left to be the caregiver for my brothers and sisters. So I didn't have that normal childhood. And, you know, I didn't get a chance to go out, you know, and play with the kids and do all of that stuff because, I had things to take care of at home.
Right.
So when I did actually get a chance to do those things and actually be a part of my first organized team sport, which was Pop Warner football, Staten Island Boys Football League. It was a struggle. It was a grind because I couldn't go to the practices all the time. I was late quite often. It was due to the fact of my situation at home. I had to care for my brothers and sisters. But, you know, it's amazing when you get a coach or especially, you know, at that age, you get someone of an adult to come and step in and say, look, I understand. I don't really know what's going on at home. But, you know, you get my first lesson learned as a young man was to never quit. Because I actually quit that Staten Island Boys Football League team because I couldn't come to all the practices and they were still playing me because I was one of their better players. And I started feeling that resentment toward my other teammates. And I didn't want to go through that. So I quit. And when I left, I went to a park and that coach followed me. And he asked to speak with me. He sat me down. My first lesson learned, man. He said, you know what, Vernon, you're gonna go through a lot of stuff in your life. But one thing that you're not going to do is you're not going to quit. He says, because if you start that pattern of quitting, you're going to quit school. You're going to quit your job. You're going to quit your family. You know, you're just going to quit. You're going to have this pattern of quitting, and you're never going to achieve anything. He says, so what you're going to promise me today is that, yeah, it's going to be an endless cycle. So he made me promise him that day that I would never quit. I'm going to always try, give it everything I have to finish. And from that moment on, that was my mentality. And no telling what would have happened had he not chased me down and told me that and made me promise him that, because I know for a fact I would have quit something else. And I would have quit something else. Next thing you know, I would have had this pattern of quitting and I would have never succeeded anything. I know for a fact that I would not have made it to the other side of a lot of the things that I went through through the course of my life. I wouldn't have made it had I had that quit attitude. So that was my first lesson learned as a young man, and it stays with me today. It really does. You know.
Did you miss? Do you look back now and say, I wish I would have really had my childhood? Meaning, I don't say a normal childhood because what's normal for me is not normal for everybody, but a childhood where you didn't have to grow up so fast. So you look back and say, man, I wonder what it would be like, you know, kind of, this was, you know, a lot of people say this about Michael Jackson as well. He didn't have a normal childhood.
I thought about that a few times, man. And I said to myself, you know, if I had that opportunity to go back and change the clock, turn the clock back and wish that I had a normal childhood, to be honest with you, what is actually a normal childhood? I really don't know. I don't know if I would become the man that I am today. I consider myself a very strong man now. I think I can handle anything that's thrown to me. Had I not gone through the things that I went through, I mean, my mom at an early age tried to teach me some valuable lessons that I didn't get before, but now I get now. I mean, to be honest with you, man, if I had a chance to turn back the clock and do something over, it wouldn't be that. I think it would probably be my relationship with my mother, man. The things that I went through with my mom. If I had a chance to turn back the clock, you know, I would not have ran in my room and wished her dead, man. You know, because that haunts me today. It haunts me today.
Right.
Imagine a kid being so upset with their parents that they run to their room, get on their knees, and pray that they die, and then 72 hours later, they're gone, man. I can't wish that on anybody. And I don't care how many therapists or how many shrinks I speak to, I can't shake that. I really can't. I know I didn't kill my mom. I know I didn't, but at the same time, the timing of that whole event, it haunts me today. And my message to these young people today is to love and respect your parents because they have made sacrifices for you, some sacrifices that they're not even aware of. And I regret that, and I'll regret that to the day I die. You know, it's the first time I actually shared and talked about that without even breaking down, man, because, you know, it's just something that weighs on me. And I know that once the film comes out and they portray that, I don't even know if I'll get a chance. I'll be able to look at it, to be perfectly honest with you. That's how much it haunts me today. So I'm not going to sit here and say that I want to turn back the clock and have a normal childhood, because I don't know what kind of man I would be today had I had it easier back then. I don't know what kind of man I would be today. So I mean, it is what it is. God does things for a reason. I make every effort not to question it. It is there. I just pray to God that I'm in a position to have an impact on people today. I have that impact. You know, there's a quote from Mark Twain. He said there's the two most important moments in a person's life. The first one is when you're born, and the other one is when you find out why you're born. And for the longest time, LC, I didn't know why I was on this earth, man. For real. I didn't know why. I mean, I came in this earth under horrific circumstances. Reason why my mom got involved in those drugs is because she, at age 18, she was brutally gang raped. It's a shame for me to admit this, to say it, but I'm a product of that. I'm a product of that horrific moment of my mom's life. And no one would have faulted her, LC, had she aborted me or had she given me up for adoption, man. But this lady made the ultimate sacrifice, and she gave me life. She kept me. And, you know, and I knew because of the way it was that there would be times that she would look at me, man. It would be cold eyes, like she would look through me. It would be so hard, man, that I would have to look away. And I didn't understand it back then, but when I found out what happened to her, everything made sense. Why? I was a reminder. I was a walking, talking.
Did she ever say, because, I mean, going through that, and did she ever say why she didn't have the abortion? Did that ever come up?
No, bruh. And the thing of it is that I was afraid to ask. I was.
I got you. I was so a woman's traumatized like that, and it's sometimes not that it's easy. It's just, and God bless that you're here, because like you said, everybody's here for a reason. You know, I believe that as well, and everybody's got a journey and a life to tell and a story to tell. I mean, and
But the thing of it is, it was that close. It was that close, but there was going to be no existence of a Vernon Turner.
Right.
You know, it could have been
right
to where she gave me up for adoption, man, and I ended up with a family that wasn't worth a damn. And it's so many things could have happened, man. So I'm very careful about, you know, me wanting to turn back a clock and do certain things over. I do know that I'm hoping and praying that my mom is looking down and she's saying to herself that she made the right decision and was in back in 1966 to give me life, you know? So to keep me, most importantly, to keep me. So there's just so many lessons learned, man, when people actually get, when it's told in its entirety, my story, and they understand the struggle and the sacrifices and the choices that were made, good, bad, and indifferent. I'm just hoping and praying people can learn from it, man, and make the right choice, you know, on their end.
I definitely think so. Like I said, this is a heart-wrenching story, and I mean, the way your voice vibrates, just, you know, it kind of brings me your visual. Even, you know, we're doing this, you know, and I think the audience is going to get that as well. It's going to get that feeling of, wow, of that situation. So when you, so your mother, when she told you, and you were talking a little bit about it, she explained to you what happened, and I mean, for an 11-year-old kid, I think you were 11 at that time, that is a lot to go through. At 11 years old.
Well, that's crazy, man. Yeah, LC, because I tell you what, man, I was 11 years old. I ran home from school. I had to go to the bathroom. And I knew my mom did drugs. I knew she did it, but I never actually visually saw her do it until I ran home from school and I ran to that bathroom and I opened up that door and there she was sitting there with a needle in her arm, shooting the dope in her arm. And I was just frozen. And I yelled at her, why do you keep doing that to yourself? And she stomached me in that bathroom. And she made me watch her do that. And I asked her again, if you know it's going to kill you, why are you doing this? And that's when she shared with me, you know, on why she does it. She said it makes the pain go away. She doesn't have to remember. And then I'm like, remember what? And then that's when she shared with me what happened with her, man. And my heart just broke for her. It really did, because my mom was an amazing woman. I mean, she was a track athlete. She was in a band. I mean, she was just so full of life, man. And anytime, even with her going through that, when she wasn't in that drug state, you know, the people around her thought that she was an amazing woman. She just had a smile that would light up a room. But it was just that dark side that she couldn't battle, man. And had she had the help, had she reached out to different people or organizations or programs or somebody to give her that help, I think she probably could have handled it way better than what she did. She just ran to drugs, man, and that was her vice. That was her hook. And as people find out my story and they see what my mom did go through, you know, maybe they'll see and they'll make a different choice if they're in similar circumstances, you know. So it's a scary process now. You know, I'm an author. I wrote my book and of my life. And it's one thing to sit down and go pen to paper and you write about your life, but to have to take it to another level and have people portray characters of your life and especially aspects of your life that you haven't come to grips with yet. That's the one thing that I'm really scared about. I really am. I'm really scared about that because I don't know how I'm going to handle that, man. So I'm definitely going to have my family next to me and, we'll be in that thing together. Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, they'll be there for your support and with time, you know, you'll work through that. But I think the overall, story will very, you know, resonate with everyone around the world, and you're going to help save lives, my brother. And I think that's what you're looking to do. You're going to let those people know, listen, you're not the only one that has gone through a journey such as this. You know, this is a journey. This is real. You know, this is real. So that's big. And that's real big. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you is that before, you know, and I know we can talk a lot about the movie, but your dad was Italian. And was that one of the reasons why it was hard for you to really, I don't want to say respect him, but say, you know, Was it difficult to, I guess, really appreciate him? Because you're like, you know, you're an African American, and you know, I know me growing up, I'm like, you know, my mom and dad were both African American, and I don't want to say that's what you expect, but was that just difficult to conceptually deal with because he was from, you know, a different race?
Well, it was just so many different variables and components to my story, and you got to just rewind and think back. We're talking about the early 70s.
Exactly. That's part of one of the reasons why I say that, because you're going at that time frame too.
Well, yeah, the thing of it was that, you know, that time frame, yeah, we think we had some racial issues now, It was 20 times bad back then. And before we left, one thing people are going to understand also, you know, my interaction with my stepdad, I don't even like calling him my stepdad anymore, man. That's my dad.
Right.
I come a long way to get to that point, though. I came a long way to get to that point. But back then, I didn't have any interaction with any white people. We lived in Bedford-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn. That was 98-point-something% African-American black.
When we
moved abruptly, you know, at age six and a half, seven years old, the week before we left, I still didn't believe that we were going to leave. I heard my cousins were coming to me, pulling me aside, said, "Hey, man, when you leave, make sure you take care of your brother. Make sure you watch over your brother, man. You're gonna be around all but white people. They don't like us. Better watch your back. You know, they were scaring the heck out of me. You know, I didn't know. So
right.
When we actually made that move, and I see this white dude come out the car, I held on to my grandmother. I mean, she had to walk me to that car. So that alone, I was just frightful. I was scared. And then, you know, with the fact that white people didn't like the black people because of we're a different color and this and that, you know, that didn't comprehend to me at age 7 years old. So that was tough. And then on top of that, we're talking about a full-fledged Italian. Now, again, as we talked off air, my dad was a client of my mom's because she was out there also selling herself out there in the street. So she was out there prostituting. And my dad was one of her clients. And he saw something in her more than just what she was doing. And he actually asked her to move in. You got to think about this now. This is early 70s, man. You're talking about asked two African-American prostitute and drug addict with two African-American kids to move into an all-white neighborhood. Steven Spielberg can't have a hard time writing that, man. Seriously.
Not at all.
So people's not going to understand the concept of the magnitude of that. So that alone was a big, big wall for me. And not to mention he was full-fledged Italian, was that he was very vocal, he was boisterous, loud. And then he always argued with my mom, and I didn't understand what those arguments were until many years later. And I kept my resentment towards him because he kept fighting with my mother. And and he's white. So I had this big wall up again, but it wasn't until years later that all that man was trying to do, man, was get my mom off some damn drugs. That's all that man was trying to do. But I did not know that until many years later. I didn't know how much that man loved my mother until she died. And she's sitting in that coffin and he walks up to her. And first time I ever seen this man cry before. I never seen him cry before. And he whimpered. And that got to me. That got to me. And then months later, man, he comes home early from work. I walk down the hill. I see his car in the driveway. I'm like, what the hell happened now? Because the last time I saw that was that when my mom died. His car was in that driveway when he was supposed to be at work. So months later, I go back in the house. He's got his hand and his face in his hands on the table. I'm like, what the heck's going on? I said, what's up? Because I never used to call him dad. Never called him dad. It was always started with hey, or what's up? So I said, hey, what's up? What's going on? And he looked up at me, man, eyes watery. Again, never seen that. That's the second time I've ever seen it. He said, I just miss your mom. I just miss your mother. I'm having a hard time. And I walked up to him for the first time, and I put my hands on him for the first time, and I hugged him. I've never hugged that man before in my life. I hugged him, and I said, we're going to be okay, Dad. And that was the first time I ever called that man Dad at age 15. And, you know, he won my heart. He really won my heart over because – that's what you call unconditional love, man. That's what you call. His family damn near disowned him for bringing us in. Okay. So I got much love and respect for that. I love that man like he's my own dad. I never thought I would ever say that, but you know, many years after understanding what that man went through, he made some ultimate self sacrifices. For us, for all six of us, man.
Right.
So It was difficult at back then, yes. But as I found out what kind of man he was built on the inside, I realized what kind of man he was. Nothing but love. Nothing but love. And I want the world to know how incredible these two individuals were and still is, because they still have an ultimate unlimited impact on me today. They're giving me strength to do the things that I'm doing right now, man, for real. So I'm just hoping and praying.
That's real. That's real right
now. Yeah, yeah.
That is real. That is real. And I mean, wow. That is real. And that's a true father, you know? I mean, I tell you, man, it's just your story is so, wow, almost words can't justify just your story and what you went through. Now, when you, I know you played quarterback, and that really wasn't what you wanted to do. You wanted to run, but did you ever, and I'm skipping a lot, but I have to ask the question. Did you ever want to play quarterback in the pros? I know, or in college, I know you were, you'd run the ball, and that's really what you wanted to do. But did you ever have the inkling, be like, you know what, shoot, I love to play quarterback in the pros.
So I actually got hooked on football, and it was my dad that actually got me hooked on football. He had season tickets to the New York Jets. He's a diehard Jets fan. And he used to ask me all the time if I wanted to go. And I had that, I was in that resentment stage, and I would always say no. And he would always take my brother. And the one thing that I loved about that cat, man, he never pushed himself on me. He never forced himself on me. He never, you know, he just let me go at my pace. And but my mom didn't like that. She wanted me to be like, you know, daddy, daddy, daddy. That wasn't going to happen. But at the same time, you know, mom is mom. She's strict. So I guess she had enough of me telling that man no. And she said the next time he asks you to go to a game, you going. You understand what I'm saying? And the only thing I can say is yes, ma'am. It was a preseason game. I'll never forget, man, the New York Jets versus the Chicago Bears. And I thought that game changed my life. It changed my life. I had a direction. I had a goal. I had what I wanted to be, especially the position. I saw this man that wore number 34, 5'10½, 198 pounds. And I saw him run like I've never seen a human being run with a football before. He ran like he was on defense. And I was able to relate with that, because I was mad. I was upset. I had resentment in my heart. I needed a release. I needed something. And I saw, this is it. This is it. And I always wanted to play running back. But what happened was, in high school, I was about to try out for running back, and I went out for a pass, and the quarterback overthrew me. So I went and I threw the ball back, and I was about maybe 30, 45, 50 yards away. And I threw the ball back, and it hit bullseye. And evidently the coach saw it. The next day, they changed my position. They changed my position, and I just asked if I had to play that. Did I have to play that? And they said, yes, this is your position now moving forward. And I always, every day, even up to my senior year, I went to my coach, Coach Fred Oliveri, which is another one of my guys. That's my heart. That's another one of my hearts right there, Coach Frederick J. Oliveri. And even at my senior year, I said, Coach, you going to let me switch my position? He just laughed at me, you know, because it became a budding joke, you know. So I was I gave it everything that I had and everything that I did, man, and I was able to play play the position very well. I did well. I held my own. I broke some records and stuff like that, and I earned an athletic scholarship to Carson Newman College. And the deal was that we were going to choose a college that was going to allow me to play running back. I did not want to play quarterback. I didn't want to play wide receiver. I didn't want to play defensive back. I wanted to play running back. I said to myself, if I'm going to play only four more years of my life in pads, I want it to be the position that I want to play. And
And that's because of sweetness.
We found a school.
Is that because of sweetness?
That was because of sweetness. Yes.
There you go.
The physicality of the position, of the sport in itself, I fell in love with it. I really did. And then the way he ran, and then as I got older and I started researching even more running backs, the Gale Sayers, even when he wasn't out there, doing illegal stuff, O.J. Simpson,
Oh, yeah.
I idolized him.
Tremendous.
The Jim Browns, the Billy Sims, all these cats, man. I just started researching running backs. I was hooked on it. And I'm going to be honest with you. I was not that good of a football player. I'm just keeping it real. People say, yeah, you play in the NFL. This is LC. I was not that good, bro. I wasn't a great athlete. The only thing that I did, though, I outworked and outhearted everybody, especially at the NFL level. When both my parents ended up, my mom died when I was a sophomore in high school. My dad died when I was a freshman in college. My aunt moved into my home so she can care for my brothers and sisters while I was 12 and a half hours away attending school. That worked out all for a little while up until my senior year. I received a phone call beginning of my senior year from my aunt. She says, baby, I can't take care of the kids any longer. I'm going to have to split them up. I can't do it
right.
anymore. I took that call standing up, bro. My knees literally buckled because a year and a half before my mom died, she would always say, and at that time it was a Charlie Brown teacher. Womp, womp, womp. She's like, if anything ever that happened to me or your father, it's your responsibility to keep the family together. You got to keep this family together. Don't you ever let you guys fall apart. And the moment that I got that phone call, that's all I thought about, man, was keeping my family together. And I had no means to support them. I really didn't. My high school football coach tried to help out his cousins, but that was not his responsibility. He had his own family. I could not put
right.
that burden on him. So I left early and I started training. And I told him, I said, look, I'm going to turn pro. And with no hesitation on his part, he said, okay, let's get an agent. Now, you talk about a cat that had a serviceable career at the collegiate level. I was 175 pounds, 5'9", 175 pounds, okay, as a tailback. I did okay, all right. Small school for
right.
me to go at the level. Yeah, for me to go in a pro level, professional level, the NFL. I was a million to one shot, a million to one. But the one thing that when people I trained my, I tell you, I had three workouts a day for 8 weeks straight. I went from running 4.55s in the 40 to running 4.34s, 4.33s in the 40. By the time the scouts came, they didn't know me. I had to invade the party. I had to walk in and ask them if I can work out for them. They didn't ask for me. They didn't know me. So I had to build myself. I ended up being 185 pounds solid rock. I was they nicknamed me the Ninja Turtle in college, getting ready to go
wow.
into the NFL. I did work out some regimens that I wouldn't advise my worst enemies to do, man. I pushed myself
right.
to the point because
right. from,
I was crying. Yeah. I was
well,
crying.
You had it from sweetness. You got that. And I know you didn't mention that, but you got that workout from Walter Payton. What if he never responded back? Which he did. And he gave
well,
you
that's,
an insight.
And you're right, LC. You're absolutely right, LC. I failed to mention the fact that my inspiration and my direction came from Walter Sweetness Payton. I was sitting in the library, man, just chilling and just reading magazines, just wanting to get away. And I saw this magazine that had I was flipping through it, and it had a fan club for Walter Payton, of all people, okay?
Right.
Walter
man.
Payton, of course. I knew.
Your idol.
I ripped that out, man. I sat down. I wrote a letter to him. Seriously, I wrote a letter to him, and about 3 weeks later, I get a reply. And he
That's amazing.
I mean,
that you got a response. That's amazing.
I got a response, man, and he told me some of the regimens that he did, and he recommended me to do. And one of the ones, man, I still to this day, people laugh at me about this one, and I'll share it with you. He had me go. He said, find an open wooded area, a flat wooded area. I'm sorry, a flat wooded area that had a bunch of trees, at least 80 yards in width, okay, in length. And he says, you start on one end with the ball in hand, and you need to run full speed through the trees to get to the other side. Now, I don't know if anyone's ever tried that, okay? So when you're trying to go full speed to and then elude the trees, to get to the other side, I had put it this way, man. I had more knots on my head, my shin, and the thing really was I went to school in the South, Jefferson City, Tennessee.
Right.
Okay, mm-hmm. And when I was doing my workouts, getting ready for the National Football League, I wouldn't tell anybody what I was doing. Most of my workouts were secretive. I wouldn't tell them what I was doing. So when I would go to the cafeteria after I would do that one running through the trees. And I had knots on my head and chins all bloody. They thought I was getting beat up. They thought I was, like, getting beat because it was, like, an all-white school. The only people of color in that school were foreign exchange students and athletes. So I had to go and talk to the counselor and make sure they knew for a fact that I was not getting beat. I was training. It's because I had, you know, bruises and stuff on my face and head and neck because I was hitting them doggone trees. So,
wow.
But it was amazing, though, because those regimens got me so mentally and physically prepared when people looked at my stature. And if they wasn't ready, when people that came up against me, LC, if they wasn't ready to die on a football field, they wasn't going to beat me because I was ready to literally die on the field for my family. Because I knew that if I did not pull this off, my family was gone. They were gone. So I was crying half my regiments that I was doing. I was crying because of the pain of what I was putting my body through. And the other half was that I was frightful that if I didn't pull it off, I was going to lose my family. So that's the only reason why I made it in the National Football League. I played a total of 8 years professionally, 6 in the National Football League and 2 in NFL Europe, man. I was blessed to be a part of Super Bowl 25, and I put a cherry on top of all of that by being the first man ever to return a punt for a touchdown for the Buccaneers franchise history. So you're talking about a cat that had no business playing in the National Football League in the first place. But when people hear my story, they think it's, you know, I have to correct them because it's a sports movie. No, it's not a sports movie. This is every bit of a human interest story with a coding of athletics. I was just blessed to have a coding that is full circle from Pee Wee Pop to street football to the highest level. I was just that fortunate. I was that blessed. You know, so when people get a full grasp of my story and my journey, I hate when people say it's a sports story. I hate that, man. It kind of pisses me off when they say that. It really does, because they don't understand the journey. They don't understand the inside journey part of my story. So that's another reason why this story has to be told at a global level, and that's the reason why they're doing this movie. You know.
No, it definitely did. So I mean, you have what I tell kids all the time: it's not the size of the kid; it's the heart and determination to be successful, period. And football, and this is why I like being a part. I played football as well and coach. It really shows the kids. It teaches them so many different things, not just on the field, but off the field as well. It builds character. And they build friends. They meet. And I'm sure you have friends from football, maybe that, because it's a team sport, not one individual. You can't do it all. One man can't do it all. It's a team sport. Now, you as a one man was able to break a record, but you also had 10 other guys there to help you achieve that, and especially on a punt return, because You know how it is. A lot of times you're like, oh, man, there's a flag down. Are you kidding me? I just ran this thing, you know, 80 yards and somebody clipped.
Yeah.
So
you hit something on the head. Yeah, Elsie, and again, I'm gonna echo that in regards to, I don't think people realize sports, athletics, that's the best thing a young individual, man, woman, girl or boy, doesn't matter, that they can go through. Now, me being biased and with the game of football, I consider it the best sport in the world, especially for a young man, because it helps, it does build character. Now, don't get it twisted now. You got some people out there that does not lead the right way. You have some coaches out there they're just rotten. They're no good. But for the most part, you got a lot of great coaches out there. You got a lot of great mentors out there that's going to teach those right at those all those tools: discipline, teamwork, sportsmanship. You know, just the overall good character. You know, it has all those tools to teach a little boy to be a young man, to be a man. And if it's used the right way, if you got the right leaders there, the right messages would come across to these young men. I mean, I don't like getting compliments. I'm not comfortable getting compliments because it was taught to me to always work on your weak part of your game. I'll never forget Coach Oliveri. I don't know, man. Mm-hmm. I think we played against Brooklyn Tech, and I passed for 256 yards, and I ran for like almost 100 yards. Three touchdown passes, the whole nine, and you know my name blew up in the newspapers. When we got in that film room, I didn't hear any of that, bro. It was Coach Oliveri was like, "V, how come you didn't make the full three step or the full five step on that drop back? You missed that pass. Like, what's you know? You got to look at this." So he always made me look at the weak part of my game. So I never really looked at my attributes after that. I guess when it came to my senior year, I never looked at my attributes. In fact, I never looked at the newspapers. I never thought about that stuff because I was always thought about the things that I did wrong in that game, and I was really hard. And it carried with me all throughout my career. I was always like that. And it was because of Fred Oliveri that made me think he kept me grounded that way too.
And I agree. Better athletes, you see that. They are determined, like yourself. They are determined to make themselves a great player. And the only way you can do that is, I mentioned earlier New England Patriots. I don't necessarily like the New England Patriots, but Tom Brady, don't hate the individual, but you know the guy was drafted sixth round. Maybe he shouldn't even got drafted at all. And I don't say he's still hungry. Guy's got how many Super Bowl rings? He's still hungry, like he never won anything, and that's a tribute to again the character, like yourself. The character to make yourself the best player and the best person that you can be. I'm sure he's like that, and he takes those values personally himself in life, like you do.
Well, I think
to make yourself the best player and the best person.
Well, I'll tell
you
what,
be.
You get people in positions like a Tom Brady, who is very well earned and deserved to be called an elite athlete. The reason why he's called an elite athlete is not because of he's just this unbelievable athlete. It's not that. Like, he can jump over people and elude. And it's not about that. It's the fact that he gets it. He gets it.
Right.
He know that the Lord gave it, and the Lord can take it away if you don't appreciate it. And his work ethic is just you can't match his work ethic because he's just like you said, that word hungry. All the things that this man has accomplished to this point, he still has that hunger. That's the reason why he's probably going to win another one or two Super Bowls, probably because of that hunger. And the thing of it is that when you get a guy like that, and you know, people are going to hate Belichick because he wins, but that's another man that is just hungry. He's willing to do whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to call it illegal or not, but
right.
man is hungry. You don't get too many coaches like that that has that mentality. So you'll never see this again. You will never see this type of dynamic, this player coach dynamic again. We won't see this again. I'm telling you, when they finish their journey, we won't see that again. Or it'll be a very long time before we see that again.
Before you see it.
So
right.
it's a tribute. People better take notes. Why do you think everybody wants any coach, any player, or any coach from the New England Patriots? They want to get him, Garoppolo.
Oh,
how many
yeah.
games did he play? You know, but he's about to get paid because he's been under Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Okay, he's about to get paid, not because of his what he did on the field, but because of where he came from. So, I'm not hating on these cats, man. Hey, the thing of it is that it's dog life in the National Football League or any sport, especially in football because it's so physical. They got an X amount
right.
of window to get their funds. So I don't get mad at anybody who's out there making that paper and making big paper because they're not going to make that for too long. So I love this game. I respect this game. It upsets me when I see people disrespect the game. When I see them take it for granted, I have a problem with that. I really have a big problem with that, you know. So I have so much to be grateful for, man. I'm so blessed. Just sitting here talking to you, man, and sharing my story. I so appreciate this, man. I really do.
And I appreciate you and every guest that we have on. I appreciate them because everybody has a story to tell. And, you know, your story, even though I know you say, hey, you're very humble of making it to the NFL, guess what? You're still one of the best to make it. There's only 50 guys on the team, and there's very few people that will make the NFL, case closed. So my hat is tipped to you. You, of course, you had a tremendous work ethic. And you know what? You were like, listen, I'm going to make it. Guess what? I'm going to take some knowledge from one of the best players to ever touch the NFL field and understand what he does to make him better than everybody else. Well, a piece of what makes him better. And that's what you did. And guess what? That transformed you to get you in the NFL. And the rest is history. For you to be part of the Super Bowl was something too, even though I know, you know, you didn't have that opportunity to, you know, to play in it, but just to be a part of that, be a part of the team. There's very few people. Yeah, okay, they played in the NFL, but to go to a Super Bowl, that's even fewer. So, and that experience has got to be life changing. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Whitney Houston, you know, made history in that Super Bowl. If I'm correct.
Yeah.
By blessing him with that national anthem.
God rest her. I tell you, she the best rendition of the national anthem ever. There wasn't a dry eye in the house, and millions of people watching that. Their eyes had to be watery when they listened to that rendition. And you know, just like you said, man. But the thing of it is that what would have happened again? It's all a chain reaction. What would have happened had that Pee Wee League football coach not tracked me down in that park and sat me down and talked to me about never quitting? What would have happened? You know, what would have happened if Coach Oliveri didn't teach me that be hungry and humble mentality? What would have happened? You know, I mean, there was just so many different components. Had I made the wrong decision, had I not listened to these people that were in my corner trying to help me, what if I had that mentality where I just didn't want to hear from anybody, where I didn't want to listen? What would have happened? What would have happened to my brothers and sisters? What would have happened to me? I mean, it's scary. It really is scary that had I made the wrong choice at any one of those moments, my whole life and other people around me would have changed. Their lives would have changed. So it's so much of a lesson learned, man. That it's, you know, just to always make an effort to do the right thing. you know. So
no doubt about it.
I'm a happy cat, man. I really am happy and blessed, and I enjoy my career now more than I did when I played, because I didn't understand. I was only doing it to save my family, but when I look back now and I see all the things that I have accomplished, it's unbelievable. It's unreal. And if I can pull that off, man, a whole bunch of other cats that's looking at me from the outside can pull it off as well.
In the NFL, who was the coach that made the biggest impact on you? Now, I know you had coaches along the way that were tremendous, but in the NFL, I mean, you had a chance to work with Dan Reeves, even though I know that was short, and other coaches. Who could really respect and be like, you know what, he's a great coach, man. You know, he really helped me.
I tell you what, I was very fortunate, man. I was very fortunate when I got to the Buffalo Bills and Marv Levy. He's a tremendous teacher. He's an excellent listener. He really got the players, and he took extra special time in the off season when I was staying there and training and everything to take the time to call me in the office and watch film with me, and ask me questions about my thought process and stuff like that. I never expected that at that level, but I did get it. When I went to the Rams, John Robinson, I don't know if you remember him.
Yes, I do.
That's another dude that was just one of those type of coaches that says, look, man, look, I know you made mistakes. Forget about it. I'm not going to eat your lunch. I'm not going to cut you. You know, learn from it. He had that type of mentality to these players, and it put the players at ease. Now, I'm not going to – don't get it twisted. We still suck. We still didn't win a lot of ball games. But,
right.
That player-coach relationship that I really did enjoy that. And then you come across, I go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I had two blessed coaches on that team. One is Sam Weish, the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in touch with him. I still keep in touch with him today. And the special teams coach that not too many people know about, his name is George Stewart. Now, that's a special cat right there. I mean, he was the one that pushed Sam Weish to sign me when the Detroit Lions cut me. And he went to Sam's office and said, look, we got to get him. We got to get him now because we played in this division and I did some decent things. And he saw value in me. And then it was him that said, look, you're going to be the first man ever to return a kick for a touchdown for us. You don't know that yet, but I know it. And
really?
I'd be darned that. Yeah, he was the one. He was the one to do. You're going to be the one, BT. You're going to be the one to be the first man ever. You're going to make history here. You're going to make history. And I knew something special was going to happen when I played against the Detroit Lions because it was a personal thing. It was a personal thing for me. I didn't know what was going to happen. Either I was going to do something great or I was going to get cut at the end of the game. One of those two things are going to happen because I had no intentions on fair. I had no intentions on fair catching the ball, and every time I ran with hate. So I knew that something either great was going to happen or something very bad was going to happen to me. So thank God, God was looking over me, and he made that one special historic moment for not only for myself but for my team, because it wouldn't have meant a darn thing had we lost that game, to be honest with you.
Right.
It wouldn't have meant anything to me had we lost that game, but we won the game, and we made history. That's what made it even that much more special, you know?
And that's
but, yeah,
good.
Those were the coaches that really had an impact, yeah. They really, to this day, I speak to those coaches to this day.
That's good. You never had a inkling to decide to coach on a pro level or college? Never did, huh?
Well, you know, what was crazy was that when I left the game, I left it. I cut ties with everything and everyone for many years because I was so mentally and physically drained. You got to remember, I was trying out every day, every
right.
practice. I wasn't one of those elite players. I was on the bubble every day, so I had to be on point. So I worked out year round for years, and my body just said enough. So when I stopped, I stopped. I didn't know. I went into the Ironman manufacturing industry. I went into the oil industry. I went into office furniture industry. I did not want to have anything to do with sports for a very long time until I started getting an itch. I started doing some high school coaching, started doing some personal training. And as years went on, I did more and more and more. I ended up coaching Blue Gray high school all-star game. That worked out very well because I was able to give back all the knowledge that it was given to me. And, so I still do personal training today. I personal train. So, but as far as the actual coaching as a career, it just hasn't been in the cards. I know I have the experience. I have the mentality to actually pull it off if I really decided to do that. But I have some other things on my plate, man. Some other projects that I really want to get going global wise, you know. So I'm excited about that.
Well, that's what's good. So fast forwarding now, you talked a little bit about it. You have a movie about your life that is in the process. What's most exciting about that? Obviously, I know the challenge of, you know, all your personal journey is going to be broadcast to the world, which is difficult. But what's the best part of that goal when it comes to fruition, which is going to be soon?
Well,
what is Vernon Turner look in the mirror and say to himself?
Well, just to give a little snapshot for the people that are listening on how it actually transpired. One of my representatives sent a synopsis of my story to a company called Players Tribune. It's a media platform that's owned by Derek Jeter. It was co-founded by Derek Jeter and a young lady by the name of Jamie Messler. And basically, it's a voice for the athletes. The athletes can tell their stories their way. So when they read my synopsis, they wanted to do a feature on me. And they got the idea to have me do a letter to my younger self. So the reporter asked me two questions. He said, "Vernon, if you had an opportunity to go back in time, what time would that be, and what would you say to that younger self?" And all he did was hit record, and I had my letter to my younger self that I was talking to my 15-year-old self. I was telling my 15-year-old self not to go and run in that room and go on your knees and wish your mother dead. Because in 72 hours, she's going to be gone, and you're never going to forgive yourself for it. And evidently, it had an impact on more people than I thought, and especially with the Players Tribune, because they wanted to option my rights because they wanted to do the feature film. And
they're going to be the first, too, from my understanding. Their first feature film, correct?
It's going to be their very first featured film ever. We're talking about Derek Jeter, which pretty much almost anything and everything that he touches just about turns to gold. So I'm very blessed and fortunate about that. But at the same time, you know, just like I told you before, it's one thing to share your story in the form of a book. But when you're talking about a feature film, when actors playing characters in your life, and moments of your life that you have not come to grips with, that you're having a hard time with, that's the type of thing that's going to make it very difficult for me. But the great thing about it is that I realize that it's not about me. It's way above me. It's beyond me. What I'm trying to get done is beyond me, and that is I want to try to impact as many lives as I possibly can before I leave this earth, you know.
Right.
This is a gift that was given to me. This life was given to me as a gift because under any other circumstances, I would not be on this earth today. I would not have the opportunities that I have. so for many years, I felt like trash. I felt like dirt. I felt like I was worthless. I felt like I should not be here. I felt like that my mom made a mistake for many years, man. And now I have an opportunity to take this gift that was given to me and make a difference in other people's lives.
And you are.
So that quote means so much to me. I did not know why I was on this earth, man. And when I found out why I was born, I'm not looking back. I'm relentless to getting this done. I'm relentless to making sure people understand my journey, what I'm trying to do, and to be grateful for what you have, you know, and be grateful for the people that's in your circle, because they can be gone in a blink of an eye, especially when you leave them with hate in your heart at that time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You put my mom in that hole, man, and I had to talk to her body and not her to let her know that I'm sorry and I didn't mean it. I don't want anyone going through what I went through. I don't want that. So this is the only way to try to make that whole and right, and just to share my story, you know. So I'm very blessed, man. I'm very fortunate, very very happy and blessed that I'm in this position now.
You are, and you touched a lot of lives, I'm sure, that you haven't mentioned already. So you keep doing it, my brother. It's power. God has given you your reason, and He wants you to spread your journey. He wants people to see, because guess what? Everybody's going through a struggle, and we all can relate, because we're all going through our own personal challenges. And it's how you make it. You've been put here, and you understand it. I think everybody's going through that struggle, though. Not just you did. I think we all go through, like, yo, why are we here? I'm going through this. I can't pay for my rent this month. I can't, my light bill. I think we're all going through whatever happens to be, whether it be financially or mentally, or, you know, family. I think that it weighs down on you. And you need to get that inspiration, that message. Like, listen, this is, and that's why I like different motivational movies that you see from time to time. It's just, again, the journey and the message. So, like I said, my hat's off to you for putting yourself out there. That's the big thing. Because guess what, you just open your whole self up. And, you know, most people, it's hard to do. But guess what? You're being blessed. And so I tell you, anything that you need, we're here to assist you. And when things kind of reveal themselves as far as the movie, you know, we'd love to have you back on where you can actually talk specifics on, you know, how you thought, you know, it was laid out. Is it exactly the way you want it to be portrayed? So I know some of that is within your power and some of it isn't, but it'd be interesting. I tell you, before I let you go, because I know I got to let you run, but one of the actors, and I know you can't really speak a lot, but one of the actors I would like to see playing your movie, and again, I know, you know, this is crazy, but I'd love to see Chad Bosman, who played Jackie Robinson in 42. I think he would be a phenomenal person to play you. Again, that's just me, and there's a lot of actors out there, but the way that brother had, you know, did Jackie, which is like we discussed before, the way racism was, and still is, but even back in the 70s, 60s, you know, 50s, going way back with Jackie. But my point is, for him to be able to play that role, and then he did James Brown, I think he would be a shoo-in for me. If I was calling the shots down there, like, I'd make that phone call. So That's just for me. If it happens, I can be like, yo, I told Vernon. This LC told Vernon. I can tell my partner in crime, the bread man, that I influenced that. But you never know. I mean, those decisions are made by big guys. But that's just me.
I can say this much. I can't really get into detail on anything that's going on because a gag order has been put on me. But I will say this. There has been names. I can tell you the names that have been thrown out there throughout our team. And Chadwick Boseman was one of the guys that name's been mentioned. I will tell you that much. Okay. Michael B. Jordan's name's been mentioned. Mm-hmm. Taraji P. Henson's been mentioned. Who else been mentioned? You had, what is his name? Ken McGraw's name's been mentioned. I mean, it's been several namers that has been mentioned the possibility of key roles within it. And I know that they're going to go and find the right fit for every character that's within the story. I look forward to it. It's exciting for everybody. But yeah, so just so you know, for the record, Chadwick's name was mentioned.
So next time I talk to you, I'm gonna be like, "Yo, thank you, thank you, BT." All right, because guess what? LC had an input on that. At least I'm gonna brag about, tell people that I had nothing to do with it. But guess what? Like, I told him.
It's crazy because you got to think about it. It's going to be the two or three BTs that's going to be played. Vernon Turner's going to be played. It's going to be my younger self, middle school, and the guy who's going to take it home. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see how the script is laid out and how they're going to go about doing it and stuff. So it's exciting. It really is. And I'll tell you what, Brad Gann, again, he's the one, he wrote Invincible. The connection that he has with the story and his overall concept, it blew us away, the team. So he's heavy hard at work at writing right now, and we'll see what happens. Trust me, I'm hoping and praying that it has the impact that I think it's going to have the impact that I think it's going to have. It's going to be something special, something very special.
Oh well. And when you're in New York here, we definitely link up. And when you're back here in the NYC, you know, we'll definitely link up. Love to sit down with you, chop it up, and good people. And I'm very happy. I'm very happy for you that you know things are just rolling out for you. So God's continue to bless you. So. Like I said, I'm very happy for you, my brother, and just let us keep us informed. When things progress, we'll get the word out to our audience. And like I said, we're just humbled to have you on and you know sharing your story and spreading it out to the masses here. So if you had one last word, so one last thing, if somebody's listening. They really started to, it's like, wow, what a journey. What would you say to someone that's going through a very challenging, their journey is very challenging. What would you say to them to help them wake up tomorrow, to keep pushing, to keep it on? What would you tell them?
The only thing I can think of is, man, is that there are things in this world that you have no control over. There's things in this world that you just, it's not going to change. It is what it is. But what you do have control over is your own life. What you do have control over is what you do. You don't have to be a victim of your circumstances. You don't have to be a victim of your DNA. You know, you take control of your life and you have a goal and you go after it with everything you have, regardless of what it is. And everything else will take care of itself. It really will, but you have to just give it every whatever that may be. You give it everything that you have, and then all the other things are going to work out. I promise you, it's going to work out, because if four doors slam in your face, there's going to be another one or two doors that's going to open, and those one or two doors are going to be those doors that you're supposed to look and venture through. So don't be a victim. Don't make excuses for not being successful. Own it. Own your life. Own what you do, good, bad, or indifferent. Own it and learn from it.
Well said. I don't think you can say it any better. It's been a pleasure. I look forward to going out as soon as that movie rolls out. I'm going to be out there to support you, support the movie. And if you got anything going on here in New York, let me know. We'll do what we can here to promote it for you. And the listeners, if they want to find out outside of the promotions on TV, do you have a Twitter handle or Facebook that they can reach out to you?
If you guys ever want to reach out, I make it a point. I have a thing about myself is that if people take the time to reach out to me, I will take the time to reply. That's just how I do it. So if you guys reach out, you can go on my website, vernonturner.com. There's a contact form on there. You can reach out and it'll get to me, and it may take me a few days, but I will reply. And also my Twitter handle is at Vernon M. Turner. If you guys go shout out there, I will reply. I will make every effort to reply. So, just watch out for it. You can follow the process of the film. They will throw updates on there from time to time. And again, if there's anything specific you guys want to know, if I'm able to share it, I will. If not, I'll tell you I can't share it. But I will get back with you for sure.
That's what's good. Well, VT, Vernon Turner, it's been an absolute pleasure, my friend. And like I said, we'll be talking. I'll be in contact with you. And keep doing what you're doing, because you're making an impact on this world. And so we thank you. I thank you again for spending some time with my audience.
Well, thank you, LC, for having me on your show, man. It's an absolute honor. You're a class act all the way. And I can't wait to get back with you with the updates on everything that's moving pertaining to the project. And we will definitely keep in touch for sure, man. You're not getting rid of me that easy.
It's all good. Two Bed-Stuy brothers. With that said, thanks again.
Sir.
And we're going to be talking real soon.
Yes, sir. Talk to you soon.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.